Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
The National Football League is ready to reduce the preseason schedule by half. Reports yesterday from Pro Football Talk had the NFL removing the Week 1 and Week 4 games from the preseason. If this holds up, the Bills would play both preseason games at home, but more likely than not without fans in the seats. Bills host the Falcons August 21st. They host the Colts August 29th. More details at WGR550.com. The hockey. TSN's Bob McKenzie reporting that the CBA between the NHL and the NHLPA could be signed as soon as this weekend. Points that have been agreed upon reported to be phases 3 and 4 of return to play. The CBA extension itself, transaction rules, and critical calendar dates. Once a tentative deal is reached, it goes to the NHLPA for a vote. Sportsnet's Elliot Friedman reporting that the CBA would include a flat salary cap of $81.5 million for the next two seasons. It would also include an agreement on players participating in the Winter Olympics in 2022 and 2026. Amnesty buyouts are not reported to be included in the deal. In basketball, the NBA says that the overall price tag of their bubble league in Orlando will come in at around $150 million. ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski reports that between June 24th and June 29th, that nine more players have tested positive out of 344 players tested. In other bubble league news from the greater Orlando area, more players have tested positive from FC Dallas in Major League Soccer. A total of nine positive tests so far. Their tournament is scheduled to start next Wednesday. In motorsports, according to the Associated Press, Watkins Glen International is open again for racing in upstate New York. Track ownership says most of the employees who were furloughed because of the pandemic have returned to work. And in tennis, the French Open has announced that when they return, they will allow spectators back. Be sure to get breaking sports news here first by downloading WGR on the radio.com app and selecting push notifications. Breaking news on the home of the Bills and Sabres is brought to you by the Dell Technologies Small Business Podference. Go listen at radio.com/Dell. I'm Corey Griswold. Happy 4th of July weekend from WGR Sports Radio 550.
My dad's not here right now. He's still at work. So I'm going to bless him.
Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
I'm going to see if there's a clean version so then my parents and the people at my school will not get mad at me. We've got the spritzer filled with water just in case if stuff gets too fire. I'm going to set up the speaker and I'm going to listen to
Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
I think this is the best
Mike Shope
feature that I've heard in a long time. I think his flow is really good on it, and I like his aggressiveness on it. And
the Bulldog
put not enough effort in it. I think overall his flow was good, but I don't like that mumble rapping. That was my review of
Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Didn't need the spritzer. Wasn't fire enough. No spritzer for you. No spritzer.
Heyo, everybody. Good afternoon. Thanks for tuning in. I am the Bulldog. Welcome to the second half of 2020.
Yes. I read about that. Someone on Twitter said that noon today was the actual midpoint.
Right. That's right. Because of maybe leap, the 29th of February being in this year or something, like sort of mixed it up a little bit. So, I think officially, though, now, even with that taken into consideration, we are in the second half. So everybody, head on a swivel. Let's keep it together. Let's do a good job. Come on, we got this, right? Turn it all around. Greatest comeback ever. Second half of 2020. We can make it happen. And it starts now on this show. And I'm telling you, I am dug in and ready to deliver a radio show today. And by dug in and ready to deliver, I mean that I realized about an hour ago that I only work 3 of the next 20 days after today. So, I mean, I'm going to go hard. I'm going to leave. I'm already sweating. I can the sweat rolling down the middle of my back, under my man boobs. I am ready. I'm going to leave everything I've got on these airwaves. You better go. If you're not listening now, your friends better tell you to go to radio.com and just put this in the vault and save it forever. This is going to be a landmark great show today.
All right, you're setting it up. Hopefully we don't get that pick six at the beginning of the second half of the comeback game.
Right. So, Joe, what do you want to talk about?
That might be the pick six. I don't know. There's a funny Star Wars rumor out there if you want to talk about it.
It definitely was a ball up for grabs. There's no doubt about
that.
Yeah,
it was a Hail Mary on first and 10. Yeah.
To DeMarco.
Yes.
Well, I hope everybody's doing well. And in all seriousness, I mean, a lot of people, you know, get time off this time of the year. If you're fortunate enough to have still been working and get some time off and, you know, long holiday weekend and all that. So I hope everybody stays safe and has a good one. We do have a really fun show planned. A guest at 3:30 is making his show debut. Joe Yerden has been with The Athletic. He was let go like a lot of people have been let go in media and lots of other jobs during this pandemic. But Joe's been on the scene with the Sabres now for quite a few years. And I know he's been on the other shows on the station, but never on this one. So today is the day the noted jerk, quote unquote, the noted jerk. I'm going to find out the genesis of that story. It will make his debut on this show at 3:30, 4 o'clock. We've got Mark Schofield, who is with the USA Today Touchdown Wire. And is he still doing Locked On Patriots, Joe?
As far as I know, yes. Yes.
Okay. Anyway, we'll go deep on Cam Newton again. That's at 4 o'clock today. Nick Mendola, old buddy, talk about people who've been on all these shows. Nick was a longtime employee, worked a lot on the morning show, and has been one of the co-owners of FC Buffalo, the city's soccer club, and they launched a really cool initiative and a jersey that I think you're going to want to check out. And I just want to kind of check in with Nick on that because Owen and I are buying these jerseys. Like, they look really, really great. They're black. It's not Black Lives Matter, but no to racism. There's a cause, and it's got like the city grid on it, on the jersey. Like, it's very subtle, very cool. And looking forward to talking to Nick about how you can get your hands on those jerseys and just what's up with FC Buffalo as we all navigate this, this situation that is still evolving. It got treated, full disclosure, Mark Poloncarz, county executive, he's been numerous times through this. I think maybe 3 different times he's been on our show since maybe about once a month since the pandemic began. And I've been working from my North Buffalo attic while Mike is normally, when he's not on vacation like he's been this week, in studio. And Mark has been including, I don't know if he includes a bunch of us from the station, but I know that I'm included when he frequently will tweet anything that's really sports related. He's done this with a book that he's authored about the last lease negotiations with the Bills. And yesterday there was news about sports, pro sports and attendance. And Mark tagged me in the information. And I got to tell you, it's eye-opening to see some of the responses and the profanity and just how disgusting people can behave to, I mean, just anyone in general, or specifically to the county executive. But the news was that attendance is not going to be allowed at professional sports as of now. That's from the state of New York and from Governor Cuomo. And a lot of the responses are, you know, there's respectful and thank you for your leadership and I trust you. But there's way more vitriol and anger and distrust and, you know, a lot of it is pretty hackneyed and I think has been utterly and completely disproven by science over the course of the pandemic, but it's the flu. It only hurts old people. And it's just incredible. And then there's, you know, graphic suggestions about what Mark and Governor Cuomo could do. I mean, really, good times. So I don't really want to address, I mean, you know, those people are out there and you're entitled to your opinion. I don't know why you feel the need to be so profane about it. I mean, it really isn't directed at me, but I just sort of felt bad reading it. And I reached out to Mark via DM on Twitter and just for clarification, because I wanted to know if like this was being treated by some segment of the population. I mean, I don't think it's a huge number of people, which is why I don't want to like get way, way, way down the rabbit hole of addressing, you know, people who still think this whole thing is a hoax or whatever. I mean, that's just asinine to me. But I wanted clarification from Mark because I thought this is being treated like very dramatic news. Like this means, I think, to Bills fans, they're reading that going, we're not going to be able to go to games. And, you know, I get that, and that ultimately may be what ends up happening. But that's still 2 months away. Like, this is, Mark told me that the announcement was made is because baseball is coming, you know, supposed to. They're planning on it. I mean, we'll see. They're going to play all over the country, not in bubbles. But baseball's coming, and, you know, New York State has baseball teams and baseball stadiums, so they wanted it known, like, you're not going to go, okay? You don't get to go to Yankee games. You don't go to Met games. It's just not going to happen right now. And so I asked Mark, like, this edict, this decision, this announcement is something that is subject to change, right? We've got months to go, 2 months to go before the NFL regular season is scheduled to begin. And he said, yes, of course it's subject to change. But, you know, at this point, the NFL is in the process of directing teams to prepare for less than full houses and stadiums. And like, I get that the Bills haven't released an official, you know, they haven't had an official news release regarding what this process is going to be like. So there hasn't been what I guess I would refer to as official news about what is going to happen with the stadium during the regular season. I think, frankly, everyone involved, including the league, doesn't really know yet definitively what it's going to look like. But, you know, we talked, or one of the first things I said this week, I think on Monday when we started, Joe, was the Bills are calling ticket holders. We took calls from people who are getting called by the Bills and being asked whether or not they want to forego 2020 without any penalty. You don't lose your seats. You don't lose your place and your seniority and all that. But if you want to pass on this season, that is available to you. And, you know, obviously, I think it's obvious anyway, the reason they're doing that is in preparation for not being able to have 70,000 people in there this season. You know, if they're allowed to have anyone, it's almost certain at this point they're not going to be allowed to have a full house. So when I communicated with Mark this afternoon, he said the NFL has been instructing teams to prepare for limited capacity. There isn't a specific guideline as of yet because it's still 2 months out. I don't think we know. You know, right now things are calm here. That could change. Right now things are blowing up in other parts of the country, and that could change. Places that are calm could get worse. I mean, who knows? This thing is—it's a virus. It's in flux. It can—it still can break out in a place where you feel like you've got a handle on it. So, I'm struggling with the freak out because you know, I get you want to go to games, all right? But to be like acting like you're blindsided by this news, I think is you're just choosing to be mad right now about that news that might not even mean what it means right now in 2 months. In other words, in 2 months, we might find out that the Bills are allowed to have 30,000 people attend games, or, you know, some other number. It's possible they may be allowed to have none, all right? And that has always been something that's out there that should have been in the window all along. So I'm struggling with why it's such an outrage to some people that this announcement was made and that we're not even absolutely in zero fans in 2 months. Just right now, the Bills don't play right now, so you don't have anything to not go to right now. So, you know, calm down and let's see where we are in a couple of months. But you should be, I think, preparing for a decision that you're going to have to make. Or maybe one will end up being made for you, because if not enough fans agree to not go, really pass on the 2020 season, the Bills are going to have to do something else if indeed capacity in the stadium is going to be limited. And again, the word I got from the county executive today is that you almost definitely should be planning on some version of limited capacity. As a best case scenario right now, that's, I think, where we are at. So, look, I know that sucks. Like, you love going to the stadium, and the Bills are supposed to be good this year, but I'm struggling with this is, like, some sort of, oh, I can't believe it news, because it has been the reality the entire time we have been talking since March that, you know, what is it going to look like in September? Will it be normal? You know, will it be limited? Will you be comfortable going? I mean, these are conversations I think adults are having all over about all kinds of venues, not just football games. But no really no but there. It's just, to me, it's been obvious that this was going to come to pass, and it hasn't definitively come to pass for Bills fans yet. But you should be ready for it. You know, again, best case scenario is very likely to be some limited capacity at the stadium. I don't know what percentage that means, 25%, 30%, 40, I don't know. But that's where we're at. And, you know, I don't think I really want to get into comparing going to football games to protests and things, because the obvious difference is, I think for most people, I hope most people in our audience, those differences are obvious. So I don't think I really need to go much further than that, but that's the news of the day, I think, for football fans anyway, is that you should be bracing. And again, we knew this. I mentioned John Crick, who was on this show, I don't know, was it about a month ago now, Joe, maybe 3 weeks ago, whatever, yeah. Doesn't matter. John Crick with the Toronto Sun and Post Media up in Canada wrote last weekend, is when I saw it anyway, about how Canadian ticket holders were already getting called, and you know, they're being told you might not be able to get across the border, let alone can you go to the stadium. So what do you want to do? Here are your options, et cetera, et cetera. So nothing that was announced yesterday, I don't think, really should have been that jarring, unless you just refused to acknowledge the possibility that this is where we were going to end up. But I would really struggle to accept that someone who really loves the Bills hasn't been thinking for the last 4 months, I might not be able to go to those games. I wouldn't be able to really grasp why you wouldn't have expected that maybe that was going to happen. Now, philosophically, you might be angry about not being able to make that choice, but, I mean, you're talking about a league and a team and a liability, like selling tickets to attend an event is just a very different thing than spilling out into the street to protest. So, That's my spiel on that, I guess. Like, if you've been listening to this show, I don't think you should be surprised in the least that this is a possibility that you might not get to go to the games this year.
I
recognize that it sucks, but it shouldn't be a surprise.
I thought it was a probability. I would have been stunned if we showed up in the fall and that stadium would have been anywhere close to full. And for me personally, as somebody who used to be a part of season tickets a few years back, I personally, and this could be different from anybody, I would have felt incredibly uncomfortable going to a game with the current environment if that stadium had been full. So if anything, I think this decision, if it does come to fruition, at least, that there are fans in that stadium, but it is at a limited capacity, to me that makes the decision harder because I would want to know, all right, well, what happens when you're coming into the stadium? Am I going to be packed in a line with people all over the place like is normal when you're going into a Bills game? What happens when everybody gets up at halftime? Are the concourses now going to be filled with 20,000 people? Because even though it's a lot less than what a full stadium is, 20,000 people is an enormous number for what we're talking about right now. It's huge. And halftime, like, isn't everybody getting up to go to the bathroom? Everybody's getting up to grab a beer or to grab something to eat. Like, that's the time where everybody's going to be congregating. And things like that is like, okay, well, what happens when that's the case? Like, for me personally, I would have wanted, I don't even think we're close to the type of information that's out there. And maybe season ticket holders are getting this because I'm not getting that information anymore from the team. Mm-hmm. But I would want to know everything like that before I'm even getting upset. Like, oh, I can't go to games now, because I would want to know what that looks like.
Right. Like, how closely monitored
is
the concourse or concession stand or restroom situation going to be? And, you know, you're talking about such a large number of people that, to me, the likelihood, like, I've referenced, I mean, this is a very, very, very small version of this, but how I, you know, I'm sorry to keep bringing it up, but it's the only real public outing that I've attended. I mean, everything else I've done has been in and out, right? In and out of the grocery store, in and out of Lowe's, in and out of the brewery to pick up some beer, in and out of the restaurant to grab some takeout. I have not gone and sat anywhere besides the Sportsman's Tavern a couple Wednesdays ago, and that was a crowd that was probably about a quarter of what they normally could have for capacity. And so if you got like maybe 80 people in there, everyone was wearing masks when they moved around. Like, everyone was respectful of the situation. You've got a small number of people. They like a certain kind of music. They're maybe like-minded. It's a lot more comfortable, and I think a lot less likely, although I didn't know. I was a little nervous. I've made that clear, but they did a great job. The venue did a great job. You go to 20,000 people, your chances of having people who think this is all a joke and don't want to wear masks, et cetera, I mean, that just goes up. You know, your percentage, your chance of there being, I don't know, 100, a couple hundred, a couple thousand, I don't know, people who don't want to do the right thing goes up. And that would definitely amplify my unease, Joe, like you're saying, about going and being a part of a crowd that size. I mean, I'd have a hard time trusting my neighbor, you know, like believing that they're all going to try to do the best they can to be respectful of what the rules may be.
Yeah, it's not right. For me, I'm thinking more than just, you know, how spaced out are the seats? Because you can expand this now to tailgating. And is that going to be monitored? Because I would think there's reason to believe that there will be Bills fans, if there is a limitation in the crowd and that some fans are going, that other fans are going to want to show up and tailgate. And that even if they're not going to the game, that they're going to want to be a part of that experience, because it's only, you know, 8 times a year. Like, it's something that Bills fans live for, is the tailgate. And like, that has to be a part. That's a part of the game day experience. And to me, it has to be a part of the limitations that are going on. So my hope would be, if I'm a season ticket holder, that everything like that down to a T is being figured out right now, whether that be in the team, the league office, and with local authorities.
Right, yeah. Like, I wonder, I don't think the team can get real far on deciding who can and cannot park at satellite lots.
Yep.
But as far as the team lots go,
yep.
You, I would think, might get to a situation where you're saying, oh, great, you've got your parking pass. Let me see your game tickets.
Yeah.
In other words, you don't get to use your parking pass to just come here and sit here and party with your big screen TV in the parking lot. You have to be someone who's going to the game in order to use the lot. Like, I might expect, I don't know that that's going to be a part of this, but I wouldn't be surprised if it were. It sort of makes sense. I don't think you want the Bills would want on their property people showing up and partying that aren't going into the game and creating maybe some risk for them. I mean, I just think you wouldn't want to have that. So, all right, 803-0550 is the number. Should we squeeze in Seamus here real quick?
Sure.
Let's squeeze Seamus in real quick. Hi, Seamus, you're on WGR. Thanks for calling, man.
Hey, guys, I hope you can hear me. I'm at Consumers right now getting beer. I just wanted to say how much I couldn't agree with what you're saying more. And, I mean, I guess to qualify my opinion, I was a Bills season ticket holder for my dad. It was my 21st birthday when they beat the Pats in 2001. So, you know, couldn't be more of a fan. But, yeah, I was scared, you know what, list when the NFL started talking about, you know, just keeping the season going. I mean, it's sad that, you know, people are forgetting the lessons they learned about viruses in kindergarten. And, you know, they want to do this.
Yeah.
Also, but maybe we could at least have some tailgating. But, no, I'm that New York State made this call, and that the babies out there that want to call me the snowflakes are hopefully melting themselves, because you know, I was trembling there because I'm getting all these MAGA guys looking at me, but yeah, don't care.
All right, dude. Well, that's cool. Enjoy the beer. Thanks for checking in, and we appreciate the support, man. We gotta move it along here. Have yourself a good holiday weekend. Be safe. Be well. All right, Seamus. We'll take a time out here. Joe Yerden, longtime Sabre reporter, going to join us coming up next. An introduction to the airwaves of this show, anyway. He's been on the station other times. That's what's up next. Mike Schoep's on vacation. I'm the Bulldog, Sneaky Joe DiBiase, fresh off Two Bros Live with his brother,
yep.
Louis, is back at Mission Control, and we're rolling along here. Keep it right here. I'm the Bulldog. This is WGR.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Team that's been in a good position going into this void that's there at the 2C position. Dylan Cousins, everybody I've talked to, says that this guy's ready to make that jump. He's ready to enter the NHL to compete for a spot next season. If that's truly the case, and you can assist in other areas, you need another top six winger to enter the equation. There's no question about that. You've got other holes on that roster. You've got a guy in Dylan Cousins that for the next year or two is going to be making a significant case to be your 2C.
That is David Pagnotta, from the fourth period. He was a guest on Brayton Wilson's show. Brayton has been filling in for the Instigators all week. The DiBiase brothers were in for One Bills Live today. I'm in for me. I've been here. I'm in for Mike. Mike's off. I'm here. Joining us now on the West Hur Hotline. Oh, it's so exciting. I don't know how we can contain ourselves. Joe Yerden. It's NHL free agency. Joe's a free agent. So I don't know if he's a right shot or a left shot, and how he effectively uses his space bar when writing, but Joe's out there. Give him a listen and give him a whirl. Hi, Joe. How are you?
Doing good, Bulldog. I'm a stay-at-home home keys guy on defense, ready shot. So I'm ready. I'm ready to go.
Good deal. Well, welcome to the show.
It's wild being on with you. I've been here 7 years, and I think this is the first time getting on with you. So this is really cool for me. I'm pumped.
That's definitely on us. No doubt about it. So, all right, a few things, because we're sort of, I mean, we've known each other now a while, but this is the first time you're on our show. What's the story on the noted jerk? You showed up on my timeline just as somebody who I respected your hockey takes. So like, okay, I'm going to follow this guy. And I saw the noted jerk thing, but I've never asked you about it. So might as well get it out of the way here on the air. What's the story on that?
Okay, I'll give you the too long didn't read version of it. It goes back to when I was at NBC, and one of the stories that I always ended up getting to write about was the Coyotes saga, whether they were moving or they weren't. And a lot of the stories that were coming out were basically like, these guys are toast, they're moving. It's just up to the city council. So I was just like, hey, this is probably happening. And the Coyotes fans, there are Coyotes fans, mind you, didn't like it. They didn't like that at all, and they thought I had an angle and a grudge against them, that I wanted the team to go back to Winnipeg and this, that, and the other thing. And I was like, no, I literally don't. I actually went to Arizona for a few games to see what it was like and interview guys and do stories there. I was just like, no, like, I love everything about the setup there. I was like, it's just an arena in a bad place, but didn't stop the fans. You know, they were just like, you know, what kind of jerk are you, or, you know, something like that. And I remember retweeting it and, you know, getting in a public argument about it, you know, back in the stupid days for me at Twitter. But
realize that you should stop doing that. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Lesson not learned in 10 years. Let's put it that way. But then buddies of mine saw that. They're like, oh, yeah, look at this guy. Noted jerk over here. And I was like, yep, okay. And somebody made up some kind of poster that had myself, Greg Wyshynski, and Tony Gallagher on it, and they said these guys are the noted jerks of hockey, all right, because we all wanted the team out of Arizona. And Greg, I love Greg. He goes. Listen. And by this point, the noted jerk hashtag had already taken over. Greg retweets it. Goes, listen, there's only one noted jerk around here. It's Joe. And I was like, all right. Let's run with it now, because it's now the biggest inside joke, because I mean, we don't know each other that well, but I'm not a jerk in any way. I try to be respectful and nice to everybody, and you know, sometimes you get pushed too far and you got to snap off at people. But you know, but now it's just like, it's a great joke, because people are just like, where did people, you know, where did this come from? How did this happen? And it's like, it's a long, stupid story.
I like the story. We're big fans of Greg Wyshynski. He's been on this show numerous times, unlike you. But I like the moniker, whether you're a jerk or not. I mean, I guess I'll decide that after this, but I always liked it, because I think we all got, there's an inner jerk in all of us. You know, it's just we got to decide when to let it out, you know, occasionally, I think, is what it comes down to. Well, I obviously wanted to get you on here. Lots of tumult here with the Sabres organization. What's your overview of everything that's happened here in the last couple of weeks with Kevin Adams and now a pretty sparse scouting staff over at the Sabres?
Well, you know, what's crazy about it is that the optics on it are awful. And it seems like a lot of the moves that get made here, the optics are always terrible. Because I think you could justify firing Jason just based on, you know, some of the moves made, some of the moves not made. I think there's plenty in the, you know, if you're going to do a pros and cons column, I think there's plenty in the cons column to be able to say, you know, hey, maybe this guy doesn't have a handle on things. You know, for every good move, there's two or three really bad ones. And to me, that's, you know, that's justification enough. But you know, letting go of the whole, you know, most of the scouting staff, letting go of, you know, the coaching staff in Rochester, and basically just clearing out anybody that Jason hired and brought in, to me is wild. And especially with a draft coming up, you know, eventually October, November, whenever that comes around, and you've got a scouting staff that you need to hire, or you're going to be relying on five people, you know, four or five people to do all that, have all your amateur scouting notes to be able to work the draft from. I mean, that's a tall order. That's not to say that they won't hire some people that have, you know, already have scouting. They already got their notes and whatever, you know, whether it's a Rick Dudley or if they, you know, they find some scouts that are cut free at some point eventually. But, it's asking a lot, and it's putting Kevin Adams in a really tough spot. And yeah. I think that's the part that bothers me the most, is that you make all these moves, and, you know, maybe if you do this when things are normal, I mean, it's kind of how Jason Botterill was brought in the first place. I mean, you know, Murray gets fired, Botterill gets hired, he has to run a draft by himself. Like, you know, they've done this before. But this situation is so different, and they gutted the whole staff. They get everybody out of there, and it's just like, well, geez, where are you going with this? And that, to me, is the hardest part of all of it. I mean, yeah, they've got tons of time to get it figured out, but at the same point, the next thing on their docket is the draft, and you know, you've got months to get that figured out. And you know, from talking to Randy Sexton before everything got blown up, you know, he said that, you know, they did a lot more with video scouting. They had subscription scouting services that they relied on, which, I mean, geez, if you're going to outsource your scouting, I don't know what you're doing there. But it's something where there's just, you know, they want to streamline things, and, you know, that's part of the optics problem. That's, you know, everybody here is very nervous about them getting cheap again, and I don't blame them, because it wasn't very good when it was cheaper before, but now it's really bad. So, you know, now it's the point where you're just like, well, how much worse can it be if they decide to go cheap? And I mean, we've seen the lows. I don't think it's going to get back to that point unless they just decide to trade everybody.
Yeah, I wonder. You know, you mentioned Dudley's name there, and like that, you know, it's funny, Joe. Like, maybe the whole time, even longer than you've been here in Buffalo covering the Sabres, like, Dudley's name has been mentioned as an idea for the Sabres for a long time, long enough that, like, a certain kind of fan, and even I would say this about myself sometimes, you just kind of get fatigued by the idea to the point where even if you liked it 5 years ago, you're like, all right, enough already. Right? If they were going to do something like that, they would have done it. But I really like the piece that Lance Lisowski did in the news profiling Dudley last week. And I thought it was eye-opening, like, just how on top of, like, moving forward Dudley seemed to be. So, I mean, that seems like a really cool enough idea. I don't know. I guess I want to say that I'd be surprised if they added someone of his stature now after just dumping people, in large part because they might feel like there isn't anything to do for a few months.
Yeah, but I look at what Rick's history is, you know, his recent history. I mean, you can go back, you know, way back. I heard John with Duffer. Duffer was on with you yesterday. And he mentioned his time with Ottawa, you know, back in the late 90s. But I look at his time in Atlanta, and I look at his time with Carolina. These are two teams that had to operate on budgets. And, you know, I know Tom Dundon in Carolina, you know, supposedly got, you know, spendthrifty or whatever, but there were corners cut there in a lot of ways. And, you know, Rick had to make that work under those circumstances. And, you know, that to me is, you know, and it's with Don Waddell too, which, you know, hey, there goes back to Atlanta days again. But, I mean, those were teams that had to operate on budgets. And I know people are going to look at Atlanta and go, geez, well, that was a horrible team that had to move. But under Rick's care, he was getting that group turned around before they went off to Winnipeg. I mean, they won a title and division title in 08. And, you know, they moved 3 years later. And, you know, under Rick's care, that to me was, you know, that's a building blocks process. And,
yep.
You know, you don't want to put the Sabres into that same boat as saying, well, geez, you know, it's no different than the Thrashers. No, it's wildly different than the Thrashers. And, you know, I think Carolina is a good comparison. You know, one of the first big moves Waddell made down there was trading Jeff Skinner up here for a bucket of nothing. And, you know, people killed him for it, but hey, they turned out all right on the other end of it. And,
yep.
You know, if he can get Rick in here to help Kevin Adams out, whether it's scouting, player personnel, any of that stuff, just get another voice in there, another experienced voice. Because I think if you're asking Adams to carry the weight by himself, and if he's just, you know, he's the only line of sight with him and the owners, man, us knowing nothing about Kevin Adams and how he runs the team, you're flying into the unknown. We don't know how he's going to work things. We don't know what he's going to do. But if you get a guy like Rick in there who's got a really good eye for talent and can really pull some strings and has some of that experience across the league, I don't see how it's a bad thing in any way. I mean, the guy's free. He lives in Lewiston. He's at every other Sabres game anyways at home. Anyhow, like, right. just give him the box seat instead of just the seat with the other scouts. That's, you know, it's just a change of real estate up there.
In a certain way, I mean, certainly, you know, locally, geographically, it makes sense that he would come to Sabres games. But it almost feels a little bit to me, Joe, like Dudley's just been showing up at the building all these years, like going, hi. I know how to do this. I coached you guys, remember? Hi. Hello again. I'm here again. It sort of feels a little bit like that.
He's got a picture up on the media level. You know, him in the headband on the ice or warm-up or something. You know, like. It's basically been written in the clouds. Bring him back.
Oh, right.
and it's not like he doesn't have the eye for the talent. Just figure it out. Like,
right.
That's the Sabres phrase for the last 10 years. Figure it out.
Yeah. Talking with Joe Yerden here about the Sabres. He's on the West Hur Hotline with us. But before we get to the roster and the way forward for Kevin Adams and I guess your name here, whoever's going to be maybe helping him. Someone tweeted at us or at you, and I just happened to glom onto it. You had some theory about Tim Murray, and I'm always interested in any conversation about Tim Murray because the guy, like, I wonder if he's lurking out there on Twitter, still paying attention, or if he's just, you know, on a boat somewhere in the middle of a lake in Ontario somewhere, just going like, to hell with all that. But what do you make? Yes, and by the way, he just went off the books on Tuesday, officially, Murray finally. What is this theory you've got?
Well, I was asked by Ran and Ron, about Murray being so angry at the draft lottery. You know the draft lottery I'm talking about. The McDavid-Eichel one in 2015. And I told him, I said, I'm going to stop you right there. I said, my theory on why he was so angry, it wasn't because he lost the lottery. And he made that clear during that impromptu press conference where, you know, he basically pushed Brandon Shanahan aside and said, listen, I got to talk. I'm getting back in the car to drive home, so let's go. And, you know, he made it obvious that, you know, we went into this knowing we had an 80% chance to lose this lottery. So, you know, we're happy we're going to be able to get, you know, one of the two guys that we're after. But he was very clearly angry about how it turned out. And I said, my theory is that he was mad that Edmonton is the team that won it. And I don't think that's unreasonable to say. And it's based on the fact that when I talked to the Coyotes owner who finished third and also bottomed out that whole season, when it came down to the last ball to be pulled, and I think the options were, I think Toronto had the most chances at getting number one, and then it was Buffalo and it was Edmonton were right in that mix. And when it came down to it, the Arizona owner said, you know, once we saw that we were out of it, I was pulling for Buffalo because I didn't want those guys to win it. And I go, Toronto? And he goes, no, those guys. I was like, okay, all right. I was like, all right, I can understand that. So if one team's owner, and granted it's a very small sample size, of one team's owner is telling me that he didn't want the Oilers to win the McDavid lottery, I'm guessing that the reason why Tim Murray comes out of that room steaming mad is because Edmonton won the draft lottery and they've got another number one pick after, you know, punting it down the road, you know, three or four times with top two picks. And,
right.
You know, and then they finally get rewarded with the best player to come out since Crosby. And that's why he's angry. You know, I think if Toronto wins it, he's probably not happy with that. If Arizona wins it, that's just bad luck. But instead, Edmonton comes out from the back of the pack and, you know, they quote-unquote did things right and just lost honorably. And they just win it by dumb luck. And that's, you know, those are the breaks. But the fact that it was Edmonton, it could have been any other team. And I think Murray just would have been like, you know, that, you know, if you were gambling and you decided that you were going to bet on the Sabres to win that lottery, the odds are long because if you bet on the field, you've got an 8-10 chance, you know, based on the odds anyways, of coming away with a win.
So that makes a lot of sense. And Murray is someone that I did get to know him a little bit Sadly, just a few weeks before he got fired, we had a social outing with him. And he's someone who I think understands betting odds. I would just say that. I would have been stunned if he didn't understand what a long shot it still was, even if they had the best odds. And that seems like that makes knowing him. You know, I don't want to overstate this, like we're friends or anything.
Right.
But knowing him as I did, sitting with him many times doing our show, and then of course this one evening out. I think that holds a lot of water, that he would look at it like, you've had your chance, right? Yeah. You've been at the bottom and you've won your lotteries and you picked Nail Yakupov and you've got your guys now, like, leave me alone. Right. So you don't deserve it, so to speak. I think that holds a lot of water. So good. I'm glad that I, was prompted to ask you about that. Joe Yerden, by the way, is on the Western Hotline with me. I am the Bulldog. Mike Shope is on vacation this week. So the way forward here, you know, Ralph Krueger looks pretty stable. The organization seems very high on him. Jack Eichel, for what it's worth, I think it should be worth something, seems very high on him. What am I doing whenever I can do it? Am I trading pieces here? What should Kevin Adams be thinking about doing to the roster, Joe?
Well, to me, the biggest thing is you gotta get a number two center. I know they need scoring, period. But I think you need a number two center that's capable right away. And, you know, we saw how it worked. How it didn't work with Casey Mittelstadt pressing him into duty after they traded O'Reilly. We know how that played out. I'm not giving up the ghost on Mittelstadt. I think if they gave him proper time to begin with, that, you know, maybe that works out a little bit better sooner. But I worry that throwing Dylan Cousins into the fire right away and just say, hey, you're a 2C, Mr. You know, co-player of the year in the WHL, go get it. That's asking a lot of them. So I think you have to find a way to get that second center, because I think that's your key to getting Skinner back on track. You know, they built out the ranks with other forwards where you've got, you know, now you have Olsson, you've got Dominic Cahoon, you've got some guys there that can play, and that's good. they need more guys that can play. But they got to get that figured out. And I think once you get that squared away, the rest is on ice stuff for Krueger to get done, and it's the special teams. Like, just, you know, get a scheme that works, get something that plays out well. And, you know, it's funny doing, you know, getting some research done, and I had Jonathan Willis point out to me that some of the complaints that came in about the Sabres specialty teams this year sounded really familiar. And he sent me a link to a message board back when Krueger was coaching the Oilers, and it was a carbon copy of all the same complaints that people had for the Sabres operations, which is fascinating. And, you know, that points to Krueger just having to, like, pull it out and take a look at it and say, all right, what are we doing wrong here? Let's get this square. Because in my mind, if you get the penalty kill situation figured out this season, they're probably legitimately closer to being a playoff team than not, because they were defensively much better. People are going to point at the goaltending, but the goaltending was bad because the PK was horrible. You know, Hutton, you know, I mean, not get started on Hutton with, you know, the vision problem that he apparently had that nobody knew about, that they got figured out. But, you know, maybe he improves, you know, just naturally because he got that corrected. But Ullmark was one of the best goalies at 5-on-5 all season, like in the league. Like, I'm talking top 10, top 5. You know, he was a .930 save percentage guy when the games were even up. Like, that's that's really good. But the penalty kill, both goalies were the same bad. They were below .850. Like, that you can't do that. You absolutely cannot do that. You cannot put your goalies on an island and say, hey, here, save it for us, when you're not helping them out. And that to me is the big deal. But, like, you know, the issues they got to get figured out roster wise are the same that we had last summer, that we looked at last summer. Get a center, get more offensive help up front, and then figure out what you're doing with the defense. You know, they went into camp last year with too many guys, and then they traded for Joki Haru, which was a great trade, which added another, you know, chef to the kitchen, where you're just like, okay, now we're running with nine NHL guys? Great, okay. You can't play nine. You can't keep nine on the roster. And Jason, to his detriment, tried to all season. So,
and it probably cost him Lawrence Pilot in the end.
Right, which, you know, again, that's mismanagement. Like, you can't let a guy – I mean, and it's not like he's, you know, the MVP. It's not like he's the world's greatest defenseman. It's none of that stuff. But it's a guy who could help that wasn't allowed to help and wasn't put in a position to be more successful. I think Housley was good for him to a degree. But in the end, it was just, you know, they leaned on him too much defensively. I get. They put him in the D zone. He can carry the puck, get it out of trouble, fine. But it didn't work. And the crazy part is the guy that he played the best with during his time in Buffalo was Ristolainen, and Kruger didn't put them together. And that's frustrating. Yeah. I mean, it's a different system. It's different, all that stuff. But if those two guys work, try it out. You know, Steve Smith was still there. He knows who works. You know, give an elbow to Ralph and say, hey, listen, you know, these guys worked pretty good last year. Why not take a look at it?
Yeah. Hey, real quick here. This might be tough to do really quick, so, I mean, take your time. But I asked Joe this yesterday late in our show. On a scale of 1 to 10, where is your I'm worried Jack Eichel is going to demand a trade meter?
Right now, as of this moment, not too worried, but there is, but there's a germ of worry in the back of my mind that if things don't improve, it's going to be a very big problem. I think depending on what happens with this whole situation, pandemic, however long next season turns out to me, and you could shorten it up, and you know, if they play a 48 game season, whatever. I know they seem hell bent to do 82, but I mean, I don't know how you're doing that if you start in January, but if it's a short season, I think you can just kind of give that a pass as long as you get back on the normal schedule. But in my mind, it's if you don't have a direction and if you don't have it figured out in 2 years, I think you really have to worry about it. I think that's natural because that's 7 years of his career. He'll be in his mid-20s. You know, he'll be 25, 26 by that point. And if you're going no playoffs for that long and it's a rudderless ship, forget it. Like, I mean, I think anybody, regardless of talent, would want out at that point, and I think that's the clock you have to keep in mind. It's probably two seasons. If it's not figured out in two seasons, then you know, I don't think fans would say like, "How dare he leave?" I mean, sure there would be a few, but I think a lot of them would be like, "Just set him free, let him go, don't trade him to Boston, just keep him out of the division, keep him out of the East, just do something, you know, do something to help it out because this is lost."
All right. Well, Joe, we're done. How do you feel like it went? We'll have a post-interview. How did you feel like you performed, Joe? Did it go? Did it meet your expectations? Was it everything you hoped it would be?
Yeah. My thing every time after these is I hope I didn't ramble too much. So I hope I didn't do that.
No. No, you did great. I do feel like if you've been any kind of a listener to the show, even though Mike's not here, I should ask you if you have any questions for us.
I want to know what's Owen doing to keep busy.
Owen, I guess I'll say this now because it's over and I don't think there's anything that could be troublesome about it. But he was lucky enough to be included in a group of guys who are mostly junior players, OHL and USHL and NAHL, who've been skating in Erie, Pennsylvania since mid-May. Like, things loosened up there enough to the point where a rink was allowed to host private functions. And this group that we were invited to join followed all the protocols and did everything. It was a very buttoned-up situation, and today's the final day of that. So before that, we were engaging in what we referred to as the dumpster sessions, which we live across the street from St. Mark's Church, and there's a big parking lot and a dumpster out there, and I was basically whipping racquetballs at his head, and he was doing squat thrusts next to the dumpster. So the ice has been welcomed. So we still don't know what next year is going to bring. But we've got a couple of pretty good looking opportunities that we're hopeful one of them will come through. So that's where we're at.
That's good to hear. I hope there was a version of Henrik Lundqvist showing up to hang out with Eric Portillo that Owen had in Erie. I don't know if Erie's got a resident legendary goalie hanging around town that wants ice time, but But I hope that's the case. But that's cool. He gets some ice time because I'm sure he's dying for it.
Yeah, no kidding. And I'm sure a lot of guys here were, and we felt very fortunate to be able to get in on it, no doubt. So, all right, bud. Listen, this went great. Thank you very much for taking the time, and we'll hope to do it again sometime. And good luck. I hope things, you know, whatever's next turns out well for you.
Let's hope there is something. There's something down the road here. I might have to wait it out a while. We'll see, though.
All right, bud. Be cool, man. Take care.
Hey, thanks, Bulldog.
That is the noted jerk, Joe Yurden, on the Sabres. We'll take a timeout here and get into some football in the next segment. Mark Schofield from the USA Today Touchdown Wire will be on with us after this. I'm the Bulldog. Mike Schopes on vacation. This is WGR.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.